Joining me now in studio with an update from the Snyderville Basin Water Reclamation District, I have Executive Director Mike Lewis. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Leslie.
We always like to start the segment off with our flush index. What can you tell us?
So our flush index is an estimate of the visitor nights for the previous month. And for the month of October, we estimated that there were 145,959 visitor nights. And the key here is it's about a 3% reduction or a difference from 2023. So slightly fewer visitor nights based on our estimate in the month of October than in 2023.
Yeah, so would anything change that? You know, in terms of, I mean, just people flushing a toilet?
Well, if a couple things. If there were a large event in town, that would certainly make a difference. You know, some type of, say, conference, whatnot. If there's a large bicycle race, sometimes in the past we've had those type of athletic events. Other than that, this time of year, not much is going to change it because the resorts are not open yet. And certainly, as you well know, and we've discussed in the past, snow kind of drives everything here. So if we had heavy snow Thanksgiving, then we certainly would see a big increase in November.
Yeah. Something we've never really talked about is just the math that you use to determine that. How many flushes per day?
Well, this is actually quite a complex calculation. So certainly we measure how many gallons of wastewater are coming into the treatment facility. But it's much more than that. We look at the strength of the wastewater, and that is proportional to the restaurant usage. And then if it's warm, we get some water seeping into the system with snow melt and maybe even rainfall, and we have to take that out. So all of those kind of things go into this. We have two treatment plants, so we combine the numbers from both of those to come up with our flush index.
Okay. And then taking a look at the weekly wastewater surveillance summary, what is it showing for contagious disease?
Yeah, so we continue with the biweekly wastewater surveillance program. This is where we look for genetic material associated with COVID at both of our facilities, and this is done statewide. Good news is the downward trend of the genetic material, which is corresponding to the downward trend of the actual amount of COVID we see in the community, is continuing. We only have four sites across the state out of, I think there's like 30-some sites now that show elevated levels. Good news is here in Summit County, both of our facilities, as well as the Colville plant, are at the low level. Over in Wasatch County, all three of those, which is the Jordanelle and the Heber Valley, Midway and Heber facilities, they also are in the low category. So good news. This is quite a change from what we saw a couple months ago when we saw extremely high numbers. So it's great to see it going down.
Yeah, yeah, especially this time of year.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit more about PFAS. This, again, is something you alerted to us a few years back where you first started to see it in the wastewater.
Yeah, so PFAS is an acronym for poly and pearl fluoral acryl compounds. It's a big, long name for organic compounds that are man-made. And they are in many, many products that we use, everything from Teflon to Scotchgard to ski waxes. And as you have reported on your station here, some of the local ski waxes that have been used historically have contained these PFAS compounds. Those compounds are deposited on the snow, and that contamination has made it into two of the local drinking wells, which Park City Water Department now is addressing. So, you know, we want to remind people, hey, if you have some of this older ski wax that has a name on it, something to do with fluoro, don't use it. Throw it away, take it to the recycle center, and they'll get rid of it for you, and buy new wax, because we really do not want to contaminate our groundwater, our streams, and we've conducted some fish studies recently, actually using fish tissue from 10 years ago that we saved, and we've determined that you know, the fish in our local streams are have many different PFAS compounds in them, and that's something we'd like to see you know, corrected in the future. So don't use your fluoro ski waxes.
Yeah, so you did the research?
Yeah, we collected fish tissues in association with a study that we did with Baylor University about 10 years ago for pharmaceuticals. And we had saved tissues from that study, kept them frozen. And now that the laboratory capabilities have improved greatly to look for PFAS compounds, we thought, well, let's look at these older tissue samples. And sure enough, we looked for 32 different PFAS compounds, and we found 20 of those in brown trout and also the what we call the mottled sculpin, which is a tiny little fish that the brown trout feed on. And, you know, this is obviously coming from the treated wastewater, but it's also coming from upstream sources, which could possibly, and we haven't definitively determined this, but, you know, when you have contaminated groundwater from skewaxes, you know, that all adds to the situation.
Sure. And in terms of, I mean, even so, it was 10 years ago, because we've had those racing waxes around for decades, I'm sure.
Right.
But what about, I mean, what does that show? I mean, what does that mean for just a human?
As I indicated, you know, PFAS compounds are in our nonstick skillets. They're in Scotch Guard. They're in many plastics that we use. And a lot of that will end up in wastewater because everything from cosmetics to you name it, including, you know, various type of clothing. Then you wash the clothing, those PFAS compounds end up in the wastewater system. Our wastewater treatment plants, even though they're advanced and highly sophisticated, were never designed to remove PFAS compounds. PFAS compounds is relatively new science. There's 15,000 PFAS compounds, and we only have laboratory capabilities to even test for a small portion of those. So this is all pretty new stuff, and a big part of this is the fact that historically the laboratory capabilities simply did not exist to be able to test for these compounds, and now that the capability exists, we thought we'd look at those fish samples, and we looked for 32 particular compounds, as I indicated, and sure enough, we found 20 of those in the fish tissue of the local fish.
Wow. Anything coming down then from the EPA? Because there was some talk about that there might be some regulations regarding this.
So EPA has proposed drinking water standards, and those are being worked on. We anticipate PFAS compound regulations for wastewater also in the future. Those have yet to be drafted, but we do anticipate that at least sometime in the future that'll be the case. And there will be a compliance period of time, and we suspect we'll need to add some type of treatment technology to remove these compounds. Good news is that we know how to do that. We've done some testing to remove all the pharmaceuticals as well as PFAS compounds, and it's just a matter of cost and knowing what limitation we need to shoot for in the way of regulations.
Yeah, what would you use? I mean, is it a chemical fix or a filter fix?
The first thing we would do is we would use like ozone to oxidize these pharmaceuticals. You know, there's thousands of pharmaceuticals, and new pharmaceuticals are being developed every day. And you don't target just one specific, like, say, Prozac or estrogen. You kind of want to get rid of all of them. So we would destroy those organic pharmaceuticals with an oxidant like ozone. Then we'd go into a biological filter to kind of polish that. And then at the very end, we would probably use activated carbon to capture the PFAS compounds. Much like carbon in the back of your aquarium. It's a similar type situation. And then you would use that carbon for a while. And once it's what we call spent, meaning it's done its job, then we would replace it.
Yeah. And then for the drinking water, how we solve that, I mean, do our water filters or reverse osmosis machines make a difference?
Well, certainly reverse osmosis will get rid of PFAS. On the drinking water side, you know, I'll let here locally on the specifics, I'll let them speak for that. But generally, you know, you can comply with your PFAS limits by blending with clean water. If you have one small source that has a low level of PFAS compounds, you can blend that with other waters and not have to actually do any treatment whatsoever. And that's done very frequently. Otherwise, there are similar techniques to capture the PFAS compounds. Again, you can use carbon, you can use these type of resins that chemically capture the PFAS. So there are some technologies that certainly cost money, but again, this is all really new science, and we're just now learning what the negative impacts are of some of these specific compounds.
Okay, and again, why don't we want PFAS in our bloodstreams? Or
well, this is what the new science. You know, the very recent science has shown us that some of these PFAS compounds are, in fact, pretty serious negative health consequences. Everything, and, you know, you hear about the cancers and the kidney diseases and things. So there's some of these PFAS compounds that are serious and need to be removed. And in fact, a couple of them have already been prohibited from being manufactured anymore. But there's many products that contain these compounds, and it's going to take a while before we get this under control.
Okay. And you also have some tips for us. Tell us about those.
Yeah, just a couple things. One, if you want to try to lower your water and sewer bill, make sure you check your commodes to see if they're leaking. And this can easily be done by put a couple drops of food coloring in the tank and you know that holds the water. Do not flush your commode and just wait a while. And if that colored water shows up in the bowl of your commode, that means you have a leak. And, you know, if you're a do-it-yourselfer, you can go to Home Depot and buy the little seal and fix the problem. But we run into that quite frequently. So check on that. Second tip might be this time of year is, you know, if you are cooking Thanksgiving dinner and you have a big pan of oil and grease from the turkey, whatnot, don't dump that down the drain, because when it's cold outside, the sewer pipes are cold. And that those oils and greases will solidify and stop up your sewer line or the main sewer line, and bad things happen when raw sewage backs up in your home on a holiday. So you don't want to dump oil and greases down the drain ever. Third one is if you have a large home and say you have a bathroom or even a utility room drain that you don't use, pour some water down it occasionally, because each of these drains have a little what we call gooseneck that keeps sewer gases from entering the home. And we get calls quite frequently where people says, hey, my house smells like sewer gas. What's going on? And we tell them, to, hey, run the water on all their sinks and drains and showers. That almost always corrects the problem.
Okay. That's what are called those P-traps?
Those P-traps. Yeah. Fill them, keep them full of water. And, you know, do that every couple months and you'll avoid having problems.
Okay. And back to the idea of toilet leaking. I mean, how much water are we talking about? So just drip, drip, drip?
Well, I can speak for myself. I have a bathroom at the lower part of the house that someone used, and the seal didn't seal tight. And it was enough water where the water company contacted me and says, you got a leak in your house someplace. And I had to... I thought, well, okay. So I went around, and sure enough, that little stopper that seals off the water didn't quite seat correctly. And, you know, it ends up being, you know, thousands of gallons at a time.
Okay, significant. Yeah. And again, we're just talking about that little rubber piece that just degrades over time.
Huh? Right. You know, if you pick up the lid of your tank and you look down in it, you'll see this kind of little round, sometimes red or orange or black, that seals that water. And they're easily replaced. And if you're not a do-it-yourselfer, you know, it's a minor fix for a plumber.
Okay. Hey, Mike, thanks.
Thanks, Leslie.
Mike Lohrs is the executive director of the Snyderville Basin Water Reclamation District.